We are Bike. Welcome to another episode of the Ace of Spades Dynasty League Pod.
Turn this shit up, please.
Y'all know who the fuck it is, man. It's the host with the most, Cam, aka the Dynasty Demigod, aka the Ace of Spades Thanos, aka the four-time champion, aka Mister, you fuck with me, you fucking with the best. Follow me on Twitter at Cam's Not Sober. And I'm joined once again by co-host Curtis, aka Kurt Cashy, aka the 2020 Ace of Spades World Champion, aka Danny's big homie, aka Mr. Take Your Best Player, send you into a rebuild, make you not want to pay $25 for the fantasy league, and then make you quit. Kurt, what's good, bro?
What's up, man? And let me give you a props real quick on something I just noticed, man.
What's good?
Bro, how did you end up with picks 2, 4, and 5? Like, you just... Hey, that's... Bro, man. Hey, you acquire, like, a bunch of picks, and then I look up, and you just have, like, three really good ones, bro. Like, hey, that's fire, bro. You've been working.
Hey, bro. Yeah, a lot of off-season moves, but I was thinking about that the other day. And you know what else, bro, I thought about when I was looking at my own draft picks for this year?
What's that?
Do you know how many people in our league own their first-round pick, like own their actual first-round pick?
Elmo?
Not even.
Damn. Then Ray, maybe? It's got to be like, it can't be that many. Oh, Chris. Chris is one for sure.
Chris is one.
So let me think. Chris and Danny. So it might be like two.
Yeah. I think that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's it. Only.
I know I don't have mine.
Let me see. I'm about to confirm. Danny, Chris, and Ray, yeah. Three out of 12 on their picks. That's crazy to me.
Yeah, man. That's interesting.
Hey, but why?
I like how you did that.
Hey, but why niggas who are losing games, bro, trading their first round picks?
You know, that's something I wonder about every year, but hopefully, man, that pie you did yesterday, man, the Dynasty for Dummies, bro, maybe them niggas learn that in order to rebuild their team, they might need those picks. Or, I mean, they need picks in general, so I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. But, yeah, no, I appreciate you calling that out, bro. Yeah, I don't know. I can't remember how I got the second first-round pick. The first one I got was from last year. Like, I bought the pick way in advance. That's when I sent DJ Chark to Tabron for his first-round pick that turned into the number two overall. Then I took all my mid-round picks in pick 13 and sent that all to Mook for the 104. And then for the 105, straight up, I sent Clyde. So the only one that I really, like, took a bunch of mid-round picks or, like, consolidated a bunch of picks was for the 104, and then it's just a straight up trade for the Jamar Chase pick. But yeah, I feel like I was able to keep my nucleus intact while also getting like three shots at, you know, the top five prospects in the rookie draft. So I'm pretty happy about that. But speaking of the draft, bro, the NFL draft is 12 days away.
Man. Oh shit! Yeah, like that's right around the corner.
That's right around the corner, bro. We gotta make sure we schedule the Zoom call for us to all be like, prepared to hop on like during draft night. I think last night it was what, like 2 hours maybe.
Yeah, it was a pretty long time, but it went by fast, man. Because you know we were just in there chilling. I think, you know, pretty much everybody dropped by at some point.
Yeah.
Even, you know, even if they didn't stay for the whole thing, it was fun, man. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Shout out to the real ones. Me, you, Chris, Justin, Rio. Rio came late, but he was there for the rest of the draft. Jay Mula came late. He was there for the rest of the draft. BT was there majority of the draft. The Danny. Only ones, Danny was there for the whole draft. Shout out Danny. The only ones who weren't there for the, like, who just stopped by, like, very briefly was Tabron. And KB didn't show up at all.
Nope.
KB wasn't at the live, he wasn't at the NFL draft at all. He was at the rookie draft, though. And he made his picks, and then after his third pick, he shook. But hopefully we get everybody in as close to on time as possible, and we could chop it up. You know, all these niggas know each other now, so everybody should be more comfortable with one another. So we should have, you know, a more interactive live draft session, and also maybe some more dialogue and banter throughout, because everybody has a bit more, you know, focus on the draft because they're more invested in Dynasty in the league. So it's more important to see where these pieces go as opposed to last year. You know, everybody was still kind of getting familiar with everyone in the league and, you know, probably didn't understand Dynasty to the degree that they do now. So hopefully this year during the draft, you know, people are more involved and more excited to see where the pieces fall. I know I will be, because, like, even with the number one overall pick in the NFL draft, I had the 101 in the rookie draft. And I should have been more excited about the first few picks, but I wasn't for some reason. I was just focused on where the first running back domino was going to fall. But this year it's going to be real important for me because I'm trying to draft a quarterback. So all these QB landing spots in the top 10 are going to be hella, hella exciting, bro.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the media, man, they've done a really good job of stirring up the excitement around these QB situations too, because I have no skin in the game, but I'm interested to see, like, where everybody lands, if it's going to be Zach Wilson at 102 or Fields, or is it going to be Fields at 3 or Mac Jones or Trey Lance. Like, I'm interested in seeing, like, where all of these rookies land too. So yeah, man, should be an exciting draft.
Yeah, it really should be. I'm really looking forward to seeing, we talked about it on yesterday's podcast, but you know, pick 3, I want to see what quarterback the San Francisco 49ers have been eyeing for the past, you know, several months. So yeah, it's a lot to look forward to. Anyway, let's get right into the draft. Let's get right into the main segment of the podcast. We're going to talk about some regression candidates, some leap forward candidates, as well as some potential bounce back candidates for 2021. We'll take a few from each team. Kurt, is there a team in our league that you want to start with? I got, you know, I don't want to start with myself. I have myself at the top, but any team other than myself we can kick it off with.
Let's start with BT.
All right, bet. Why don't you kick it off with BT's team, and I'll give mine.
All right, so for BT, the regression candidate that I selected for BT was Ronald Jones. I mean, I think that backfield is, you know, it's gotten a lot more crowded since BT acquired Ronald Jones, and I think the way that he was, like, utilized or wasn't utilized in the playoffs, I don't think that's a good sign for Ronald Jones. So I can see him taking a step back from his production from the previous season. And the player who I said would take a leap forward would be Jalen Hurts. I mean, he's being thrusted into the starting QB position, so I would imagine that he would take a step forward in, like, fantasy production.
Yeah, for sure. My leap forward for BT's team was Jalen Hurts as well. I mean, he got the keys to the offense. They don't have a way to replace him in the draft. They traded out of that sixth pick. And, you know, the offense should be built and tailored around him for 2021. So he's the only QB worth a damn in the QB room. They should be building the offense around his, you know, his strengths, which I expect to see a lot of read options with Miles Sanders and a lot of volume in the run game in the rushing department for Jalen Hurts, because he's a great rusher at the QB position. So that's my leap forward for him as well. I had another leap forward for BT. I didn't have any regression candidates, but I think Ronald Jones was a good one. Another leap forward I have for BT was TJ Hockenson. Just because he's the de facto wide receiver one in that room right now. I'm assuming they'll add another pass catcher in the draft, but even when they do, you know, TJ Hockenson could be the you know, the wide receiver one or wide receiver two at worst on that team. You know, new quarterback, learning a new offense, probably going to want to funnel targets over the middle of the field. Jared Goff isn't, you know, an outside the numbers gunslinger. So I expect him to live in the short and intermediate game. And, you know, tight end is usually quarterbacks like that. They're their best friends. So I expect TJ Hockenson to take a step forward just based on volume alone. Let's go to somebody else's team. Let's go to Elmo's team. And I'll start with my three. So I have a leap forward candidate for Elmo's team, a bounce back candidate, and a regression candidate. So Elmo's leap forward candidate I have is Jerry Jeudy. He's going into his second year in the offense. Hopefully there is more consistent play from the quarterback, Drew Lock. We talked about this on a podcast a couple months ago. Jerry Jeudy was the league leader in lowest catchable target rate percentage. I don't even know if I can call him a league leader. He was league worst in catchable target rate. Only 55% of his targets were catchable, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, he was the de facto wide receiver one when Jeudy is probably more of a beta receiver. So I think Courtland Sutton coming back into the fold will actually help Jerry Judy's efficiency and give him the ability to work across the middle of the field and get open with that elite route running capability that he has. So he's a leap forward candidate to me, just being in a, you know, going through a full offseason and a full season, you know, with COVID last year, probably stunted, you know, all rookie wide receivers development a bit. So just having a full year of integration into the offense and into the system should bode well for his production this year. The bounce back candidate I have for Elmo is Chris Godwin. Chris Godwin had a ton of bad breaks last year with injuries, particularly the finger injury that he had and struggled to come back from. He just wasn't as consistent as we're used to seeing. And, you know, he was also in his first year with Tom Brady and that new look offense as well. So if Chris Godwin can stay on the field, he's going to produce more than, you know, the wide receiver three numbers or totals that he produced last year. And last, in terms of regression candidates for Elmo's team, I have Justin Jefferson. He was just super efficient as a rookie. He's going to go into this season as the number one receiver on that offense. All the attention is going to be on him, and defenses will probably look at Adam Thielen as the beta. He had 1,400 yards even and 7 touchdowns. I mean, that's just a lot of yards for a wide receiver. I don't know what that breaks down to on a per-game basis. I know we have 17 games this year instead of 16, so I don't know. He could reach the 1,400-yard mark again, maybe with the extra game. I just don't think he will. Once defenses start to key in and focus on him and he's playing against the alpha corner on the defense every game, he's probably going to have to get an uptick in volume to reach this level of production this season. Also, bro, something that goes amiss when people are evaluating Justin Jefferson and catapulting him into this top five dynasty wide receiver conversation, even sometimes top three, they were excellent in garbage time last year, Minnesota. You know, so if that team gets any better and gets positive game scripts, you know, Justin Jefferson and all the damage that he did towards the end of games is not going to exist. So he got a ton of volume like late in games when that team was trailing. They were a really bad team. They were forced to throw a lot more than Mike Zimmer really likes Kirk Cousins to throw. So I think he takes a step back this year. Don't really know what it looks like from a statistical perspective because I haven't like done any projections or anything like that. But I think it's safe to say we can expect him to regress a little bit. What did you have for Elmo's team?
So I think, first of all, that was a good call on Justin Jefferson. I would have never thought about that, but that was really interesting. So I had, as a regression candidate for Elmo, David Montgomery.
Oh, good one.
You know, he benefited a lot from Tariq Cohen. I almost called him Naeem Hines. He benefited a lot from Tariq Cohen.
Same thing.
not being there. So, I mean, he pretty much, I think his backups were like Ryan Nall and Artavis Pierce. So, you know, non-existent backups, he pretty much received the full workload with Tariq Cohen not being there. So I think with Tariq Cohen coming back in the addition of Williams, I think we'll see that workload decrease. So I think, you know, will see the numbers for Monty decrease on a regression candidate. For the player who I said should take a leap forward, I picked Bucks guy, man, Dan Jones. I thought Dan Jones was a good leap forward candidate. Just because they added a true alpha wide receiver there. So, you have that. You have the return of Saquon Barkley. You have, like you said on the pod yesterday, you have the other receivers returning to roles that they'll probably be a little more comfortable with. Like Slayton could be a number two wide receiver instead of being the number one. And then you'll have like Sterling Shepard being the slot wide receiver where he actually belongs. I can see him taking a step forward next year.
Yeah, I think those are great calls, especially the David Montgomery one. Another thing that benefited David Montgomery last year, besides the obvious, uptick in volume with Tariq Cohen out and no backfield competition, that schedule was real soft at the end of the year, like real soft. And also, they had the offensive coordinator play calling as opposed to, Matt Nagy. So I don't know what that differential looks like, but I remember when Matt Nagy was calling plays for David Montgomery, probably a combination of scheduling and that, he wasn't nearly as good. So it was a perfect storm for David Montgomery's production last year, so we can absolutely expect him to take a step back. That was a good call. Let's get into Chris's team next. I'll kick it off with Chris's team. Bounce back, this was easy for me, it's Ezekiel Elliott. The offensive line should come into the season healthy. Dak Prescott is back. I don't think there's any more to be said about that. Cortland Sutton as a bounce back candidate as well. He's coming back off of a major knee injury, so just him being present will bode well for his fantasy production. And last but not least, another bounce back. Didn't have any regression candidates for Chris's team because all of his players regressed last year. So there's only up for Chris. Last bounce back candidate, Kenny G. He struggled with injury as well, just like Cortland Sutton. He was only supposed to miss 4 or 5 games, but ended up. I believe just sitting out the rest of the season, kind of like we've seen AJ Green do in the past. Like team doesn't want to pay me, I'm not gonna play type thing. So I think Kenny G was healthy for quite some time towards the end of last season, but probably pulling a Joe Mixon thing like, oh, by the way, my hamstring hurts or my knee hurts. So 3 bounce back candidates for Chris's team: Zeke, Sutton, and Kenny G. I'll expect them all to be productive this year. What do you got for Chris?
So for Chris, I actually did have a regression candidate, but I mean, not anyone that should be super impactful to him. But I thought we would see J.D. McKissic regress next year. I mean, I think this past year he saw career highs in rushing totals, catches, and receiving yards. I think he's going to see some of that work to Antonio Gibson. I think they're going to shift, that offense more into that direction. I mean, I don't want to say that Gibson is CMC, but I mean, we have seen the head coach at least be comfortable with one running back, assuming most of the workload. So I don't see McKissick's role growing next year at all. I see it decreasing. So that's why I listed him as a regression candidate. But I did have Kenny Golladay as a bounce back candidate. I mean, he missed most of the season. I think he played like 4 or 4 games or something last year. New situation. I'm sure he'll be happier, and I'm sure he's he wants to go out there and perform, improve. That he is a true alpha wide receiver. So I think his Giants situation should be a little bit better for him than Detroit. So.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't know if it does anything for his overall production. I think Kenny Golladay is probably going to get around the same volume and same yardage and same touchdown opportunity, but I think his value is more insulated now. It's safer, and he does have that role on that team because there's no other player like him on that Giants offense. And I also think the J.D. McKissic call was a good call. I just don't know if niggas like that are going to make like rosters. So that was a nice pull by you on the J.D. McKissic thing, and I think there is something there. I think the team actually likes J.D. McKissic, so it's just difficult to know, what the coaching staff is going to do with players like that. Because when you look at the efficiency metrics from J.D. McKissic, he had over 100 targets. He caught so many passes, but he was so bad on a per catch basis. He was just not good. But we've seen players like him for quite some time just stick around on teams and continue to be used, like Giovanni Bernard was never efficient as a pass catcher, but he was the pass catching back for the Bengals for so long. So we'll see. I would be happy to see Antonio Gibson step into more of that you know, 2 and 4 minute drill, three down back roll. But you know, we'll see. We'll see when the season starts. Who's next? Let's go to Jamal. Kurt, I'll let you kick off Jamal's team with what you got, and then I'll follow up.
All right. So for Jamal, interestingly enough, bro, these are two players that you traded to him recently. But I have Irv Smith taking a leap forward. What's his name? Randolph?
Kyle, is that his name? Kyle Rudolph.
There we go. I don't know why his name escaped me like that. But, yeah, Kyle Rudolph is not there anymore. So he should be the number one, you know, receiving tight end there. So I think he'll take us the leap forward. I think that like them moving away from Rudolph was a good sign for him. So we'll see what he does next year. And I have Joe Mixon as a bounce back candidate. Again, you know, just somebody who is dealing with injury. I don't know what they plan to do, like in terms of replacing Giovanni Bernard. But I mean, if the plan going forward is to give Mixon like three downs, I think he's going to be an RB1 next year. So that's where I'm at with Jamal's.
Yeah, I'm on the Joe Mixon RB1 train. I'm on the Joe Mixon top 10 train. Honestly, if Joe Mixon plays 15 games, if he plays 15 out of 17 games, in my opinion, that dude's a locked in RB1, especially with the increased volume that we project with Giovanni Bernard no longer being there. My leap forward for Jamal's team was the same as well for the reasons that you mentioned. Kyle Randolph, as we will call him going forward on this show, no longer there. No longer taking the red zone work away from Irv Smith, as well as the fact that Irv Smith, he ran so many routes last year. He was already heavily utilized in the pass game, and now if you're going to give him more work and keep him on the field even more, I think we can expect him to be more consistent. So his overall production should take a leap forward. Also have two bounce-back candidates for Jamal, his two quarterbacks, Matt Ryan and Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow for the obvious injury reason, and Matt Ryan just because – you know, Matt Ryan is a completely different quarterback when he doesn't have Julio Jones. If Julio Jones is expected to come back healthy, I expect Matt Ryan to bounce back to form. He's still a back-end QB1 for me. I'm still a believer in Matt Ryan. He isn't that old yet. I think he's only 35 years old. So I think he has another, you know, 2-3 productive seasons left in him. So I expect him to bounce back as well. Let's move on to Mook's team. I'll start off with Mook. Leap forward, I think. Cautionary leap forward, I'll say T. Higgins. And I say cautionary because if they draft Ja'Marr Chase at 5, this is no longer a leap forward to me. I think his production will flatline. But if he is going to go into the season as the alpha wide receiver on the Cincinnati Bengals with Joe Burrow and the chemistry that they started to develop last year, I think it's safe to say T. Higgins will take, you know, potentially a huge step forward. No A.J. Green, that's over 100 vacated targets. I mean, if he steps into that A.J. Green role, just the volume alone will give him, you know, a huge boost in production. So I'm big on T. Higgins this year, especially, Kurt, following this NFL draft. If that pick is Penny Sewell and not a receiver and not Kyle Pitts, T. Higgins' stock is going to go through the fucking roof. So I'm big, big, big on T. Higgins this year, all in on him as long as he don't draft another wide receiver in the first round. Another leap forward candidate for Mook's team, I had Noah Fant. I think, you know, he's dealing with a bunch of ankle injuries last year on both ankles, if I'm not mistaken. Again, just like Jew, inconsistency with the QB position. Not sure what Denver's going to do in the draft. They could still trade up from 9 to 4 and draft a quarterback, or they could stay put at 9. And according to some of these expert mock drafters, players like Justin Fields could potentially land to 9. Where the Denver Broncos pick. So we'll see. Regardless, more consistency at the QB level should bode well for Noah Fant in his projection this year. So I'm all in on a healthy Noah Fant taking the leap forward as, you know, one of the top dynasty tight ends. And regression Canada had for Mook's team was Tom Brady. He was hyper efficient. He threw 4,600 yards and 40 touchdowns. Like, even, you know, Aaron Rodgers and Mahomes don't do that every year. So I'm expecting, you know, Tom Brady and company, that entire team, to take a step back in terms of offensive totals, partially because I expect that team to be a bit better, like for real life football. So I expect them to be better running the ball successfully, more positive game scripts, everybody on the same page with Tom Brady. Tom Brady's game isn't, you know, drop back and throw the ball 45 times a game. At least that's not what they like to do. They like to be efficient. They like to move the ball well. They like to be in positive game script. So I don't think Tom Brady will have to do as much this year. It has nothing to do with his individual talent. He obviously showed us that he can still produce at a high level for fantasy. I just don't expect it to be at this level. So that's my regression candidate for him, for Mook's team. What do you have for Mook?
So my regression candidate for Mook is Nyheim Hines, who finished last season as a high-end RB2. That's a good one. I think a lot of it was looking at the numbers, a lot of it was due to how he was utilized in the pass game. I don't know if that was necessarily scheme. I do know that the quarterback that they had last year, Philip Rivers, has a tendency to throw the ball to the running backs quite a bit. So I don't know if they were scheming plays for Nyheim Hines to get receptions or if that was just Philip Rivers. But I mean, either way, with the return of Marlon Mack and with the emergence of I almost called Jonathan him Josh Taylor. Jacobs, Jonathan Taylor last year, I see his role being decreased in that offense. So I have him as the regression candidate. The player who I said would take a leap forward is the same as you, T. Higgins, with the, like you said, like with AJ Green not being there anymore and those vacated targets and him building more of a rapport with Joe Burrow. I could definitely see him taking a big leap forward. Even if, they do draft another wide receiver, I still can see him, taking a step forward from what he did last season. I don't know if the leap will be quite as great. I'm like you. I would be all in if they don't take a wide receiver in the first round. But, yeah, I definitely see him taking a leap forward regardless of next season.
Yeah, no, for sure. And it's going to be really interesting to see how the draft pans out because that's going to be pivotal for T. Higgins' projection. Let's get into Ramon's team next. We don't have to spend a lot of time on this, and he's got, a lot of work to do on his roster. But I think something that one player that is worth mentioning for a leap forward is Quintez Cephus, just because, all of their starting wide receivers from last year are gone. Kenny Galladay, Danny Amendola, as well as Marvin Jones. So, we talked about TJ Hockenson being the de facto number one pass catcher on the team. But in terms of wide receiver designations, Quintez Cephus is, entering the draft as the number one receiver on the team. So whether or not they draft a receiver in the draft, he's still going to have a starting role. At least that's what we're projecting him to have. He got a lot of buzz last offseason in camp, which is why I sent, a trade to acquire him when he was on my team last year. So I think he has an opportunity to play, a big slot role or something like that in this offense and be semi-productive. The bounce-back candidate I had for Ramon's team is DJ Chark. He was dealing with a lot of inconsistent QB play as well as some nagging injuries, so I expect him to be closer to the form he showed us in year two as opposed to what he showed us last year in year three. What do you got for Ramon?
I actually had the same players.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so I asked Shark is going to take he's going to bounce back next year, like you said, dealing with a lot of injuries, and I mean presumably that should be an upgrade there at QB, so that should be helpful for him. And also, like you said, with Quintez Cephus, I can see him taking a leap forward. There aren't any other wide receivers there, man. So right. That's pretty much how I saw it too.
Yeah, you called it with the upgraded QB. They're going to take Trevor Lawrence at the 101. So DJ Chark is going to have, better QB play than he's ever had, throughout his career. So we'll see how that looks for him in terms of his fantasy outlook. Let's get through the rest of these real quick. I'll go through Danny's here. His bounce-back candidate is OBJ, obviously, coming off a gruesome knee injury. If he can return to speed, which for all intents and purposes, based on all the workout videos and shit he's put out, he's going to be ready for the start of the season. More years in the offense, second year in Kevin Stefanski's offense, third year playing with Baker Mayfield. So hopefully we can get some more consistency from OBJ's production on a week-to-week basis. The regression candidate I have for Danny is Mike Gesicki. Mike Gesicki is just not good. He's a hyper-athletic tight end who's not very skilled. He had 700 receiving yards and 7 touchdowns. But if you look at his splits from when Preston Williams was playing and Preston Williams wasn't playing, Gesicki was a completely different tight end. And if it takes an undrafted, slow, unathletic receiver to be injured for you to produce for fantasy. You're probably just not that talented. And, you know, there are rumors that, you know, if Kyle Pitts falls to Miami, that's going to be the pick, and that will completely obliterate any value that Mike Gesicki has. So real quick, what do you have for Danny's team?
I'm projecting Darnold will take a leap forward, I guess. I don't want to – leap might be too strong of a word, though. Maybe like a baby step forward. But, I mean, I think, you know, he's coming into a better situation, you know, better weapons than he had with the Jets last season. So, I mean, just based on that, I think – and, I mean, if they traded for him, they obviously believe in him, so they're going to try to help him succeed. So I think he'll take a step forward. The regression candidate is Josh Jacobs. that's who I have as the regression candidate, man. With King and Drake being there, I think he's going to get some touches. He's probably going to eat into Jacobs' workload. And, you know, that's not good for Jacobs. So that's who I have for Danny.
Yeah, that's perfect. Jacobs going to go from a projected RB1 to a back-end RB2. So that's definitely that's definitely a player who we expect to regress this season. Let's move on to Rio's team. I have a bounce back, a leap forward, and another leap forward for his team. Bounce back easy, Dak Prescott coming back off injury. He was on pace for some ridiculous fucking numbers before he broke his ankle last season. Leap forward, I got A.J. Dillon, and I'm still making A.J. Dillon a leap forward because although Aaron Jones resigned and A.J. Dillon is not going to be the RB1 on this team, he should take a leap forward in the sense that he'll be, you know, assuming the what's that guy's name?
Jamal Williams.
He'll take the Jamal Williams role in this offense. So Jamal Williams was actually productive as a spot start in some weeks. I mean, he was a flex play pretty much every week last year, depending on what your roster build was. So if A.J. Dillon steps into that role, I believe A.J. Dillon is a better player than Jamal Adams, and they invested a day 2 pick into A.J. Dillon, so they're going to use him. I think, although you know, people were probably hoping that he would be a workhorse back in Green Bay, they can still take solace in the sense that they didn't waste a pick on this kid. So I think he's going to get some work. The next leap forward I have for Rio's team is LaVisca Chenault. For the same reasons we mentioned, DJ Chark would be a bounce back, and that's, you know, Trevor Lawrence, best QB play LaVisca Chenault has had throughout his short career. I think he'll be able to put up more consistent numbers on a week-to-week basis. He was pretty good last year as well. What do you have for Rio's team?
Yeah, I did want to say I almost picked A.J. Dillon like you because – A.J. Dillon was like RB 80 something, and
right.
Jamal Williams was like RB 30 something. So yeah. even if he steps up there, yeah, it's like a jump in 50 spots
for sure.
But the players who I decided to go with though was LaVisca Chenault, like you said, the same reason we said for Shark, and Dallas Goedert. That's who I think will take a step forward. You know, I can't remember if they traded Ertz or if they were still trying to.
They're still trying to get rid of him. Yeah.
So I think, you know, if Ertz is out of the picture, you got Jalen Hurts, who I don't think is a great passer of the football, but, you know, those types of guys, like the running quarterbacks who can't really throw outside of the numbers, they usually like to feed the tight ends. That could be a good sign for Dallas Goedert.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm with that. I think Dallas Goedert is definitely a leap forward candidate. I thought about putting him on my list. The only reason was because Ertz is still there, and we don't know – you know what? I hope he's not back for everybody's sake. But he spent time on the field in the last season, just like kind of taking it all in, like Drew Brees did his last game on in the Superdome. So I don't think he's going to be back. I just feel better about projecting Dallas Goedert to leap forward once he's actually gone. Let's do Ray's team, and we'll do your team, my team, and then we'll save Justin for last and transition right into his year interview.
All right.
Perfect. So Ray's team, we got leap forward, easy for me. It's going to be DeAndre Swift, second year in an offense. People don't remember, he was banged up to start the season. He got a really slow start. That's a big part of the reason they brought in Adrian Peterson as a bridge for DeAndre Swift's health, giving him an opportunity to get back up to speed. So going into a full offseason, presumably fully healthy, fully integrated into the offense, with a new offensive coordinator, Anthony Lynn, who a former running back himself, who loves to heavily utilize backs in general, but most importantly, three down backs and pass catching backs, which DeAndre Swift is. That's his biggest strength and competency as an RB is his pass catching ability. So I expect DeAndre Swift to be heavily utilized. The only thing I worry about with the leap forward projection for DeAndre Swift is how bad the offensive is. The team is essentially in tank mode, and I don't know how many, you know, goal line opportunities he'll have or opportunities to score touchdowns. But just on passing volume and utilization alone, I think it's safe to project him as a leap forward. The bounce back candidate I had for Ray's team is Miles Sanders. That entire Philadelphia Eagles offense was a shit show last year. It can really only go upwards from where they were. And I think if Miles Sanders doesn't produce this year, he's probably close to a bust. I mean, we got a half a year of good production last year as a lost season, and then going into year three, if he doesn't produce now, being paired with a mobile quarterback like Jalen Hurts, and that should open up lanes for him, then I'm completely out on Sanders. So fingers crossed he's a bounce back. Leap forward candidate, year two wide receiver, Chase Claypool. Dude is just dripping with potential and upside. Second year in the offense, second year playing with the same QB, Big Ben. I don't know how much juice Big Ben has in his arm to throw the ball downfield, but you can throw screens to this dude. He can play in the quick game. He's just a big target for Big Ben, and Big Ben is going to throw the ball. Probably not as much as they threw the ball, you know, Big Ben's last healthy season, because I don't know how much juice Big Ben has in his arm. They're not going to throw the ball 650 plus times, but they don't have any, you know, 3-down workhorse back in that offense. So I mean, they're going to have to pass, and we obviously saw towards the tail end of last season, Kurt, that quick intermediate short 1 yard, 2 yard crossing route passing game, that shit does not work. They got clamped up by everybody at the end of last year. So I don't care that Big Ben isn't really that guy who throws the ball down the field a lot anymore, because if he can only run that offense they were running last year, Kurt, he's not going to be the starting QB. So I'm taking Chase Claypool over Big Ben at this point. I believe in Chase Claypool's talent more than I believe in the Steelers' investment in Big Ben right now. So I'm taking Chase Claypool, and I think he's going to step forward regardless of the QB play.
Yeah, that's a good call, man. I only did two players, but I got the same two as you. I did Miles Sanders as a bounce back candidate. I mean, for the same reason you said, you know, the Eagles offense just was not very good last year. I could see it improving, and they have a mobile quarterback. And like we said about Jalen Hurts before, it'll probably be a lot of read option, which we've seen players, running backs have success in that type of system. And I think, you know, one of the things about Miles Sanders that we have seen so far is that he's pretty efficient with his carries. Mm-hmm. So the read option thing could really help him out there. And the leap forward, I said DeAndre Swift. And it was because of the addition of Anthony Lynn, and Anthony Lynn saying that he believes that DeAndre Swift is a 3-down back. I think he's a 3-down back. I thought he was the most talented back in the draft last year. Same. So, you know, if they use him how they should, or how Anthony Lynn has used running backs in the past, like RB1.
Agreed. And caution, wrapping back to the Miles Sanders thing, good call again with the Jalen Hurts read option thing. The one thing we didn't mention, cautionary bounce back from Miles Sanders, rushing QBs, true rushing QBs generally do not pass to RBs. So hopefully the coaching staff schemes Miles Sanders into, you know, some design receptions out of the backfield, or puts him in a slot a little bit, because he is a good pass catcher. So that's the one thing I would caution to temper expectations on Miles Sanders for. But if he can get, you know, this is probably a lot for a QB like Jalen Hurts, but we'll see how he fits into the offense. But if he can get like 60 targets, I think Miles Sanders could be a boom this year. I don't know how many he had last year, but that seems like a lot for a rushing QB. So that's one thing I didn't think about until you mentioned Jalen Hurts for a second time with Miles Sanders. But that's something to keep an eye on to start the season. Why don't you kick off the next one, Kurt?
Okay, so do you want to do your team or my team?
Either one. You go.
Okay. So I'll start with I'll do my team. So the player who I'm expecting on my team to take a leap forward would be Cam Akers. I think we didn't really see him get used until towards the end of the season last year. Like he was he got limited touches until, you know, the last few weeks. You know, he had one game that caused a little concern for me, but other than that, including the games that he played in the playoffs, I think he did pretty well. So if he's going to be used like that, I expect him to take a leap forward next year. The person who I think will regress on my team would probably be Josh Allen. And that's just because he scored like 45 touchdowns last year. And I really don't see, him replicating that. I mean, he threw for 37. He ran for eight. I don't see him scoring that many touchdowns next year. So that's what happens in the regression candidate on my team.
Yeah, I think those are both calls I agree with. My players for you, I had a bounce back and a regression candidate. My bounce back candidate for you was Amari Cooper. His production fell off once. Dak Prescott broke his ankle, but he was on pace for wide receiver one season. And when I say wide receiver one season, I don't mean top 12 wide receiver. I mean overall wide receiver one season. So the chemistry that Amari Cooper has with Dak Prescott is within the realm of the Matt Ryan, Julio Jones chemistry, or the Aaron Rodgers, Davante Adams chemistry. I mean, they have a ton of chemistry, and he is Dak Prescott's number one wide receiver. I don't care about the emergence of CeeDee Lamb. I don't even care about the opportunity to draft Kyle Pitts. Amari Cooper is Dak's guy, and he's been his guy since he signed with the Cowboys. So he's going to bounce back, and he's going to be a top 10 wide receiver if both of those guys stay healthy. You can write that in stone right now. The regression candidate I had was Davante Adams, man, and I'll pair this with my projection for Justin's team when we do his. But I mean, what Davante Adams did last year is absolutely ridiculous. We talked about the season Michael Thomas had 2 seasons ago. There was no way for him to match that. 150 targets, 115 receptions, 1374, and most importantly, 18 fucking touchdowns, and he did all of this in 14 games. If he replicates this production, I will literally, you know what I'll do? I'll get two of them earrings, the little circle earrings that you put in your ear that expand your earlobe out, and I'll turn into a emo goth dude on these podcasts, bro. There's just this type of production just isn't replicated on a year-to-year basis. They were super hyper efficient. I mean, Aaron Rodgers with 40 touchdowns, Davante Adams, he caught 18 of them in 14 games. He's a touchdown monster. I think we can book him for double-digit touchdowns this season, and it wouldn't surprise me if he did that once again, because he's done that, 4 out of 7 years of his NFL career. But at the rate in which he scored them, that's something that won't be replicated. And Davante Adams has never been a huge yardage guy on the season-to-season basis. I think this is his second highest total over the course of his career. We can expect these numbers to come down a bit. If I had to do some projections, Kurt, I would probably project Davante Adams to have another 1,300-yard season, but over a full season. So I think he can push 1,400 yards again and somewhere around 11, 12 touchdowns, because he kind of lives in that space. So we can probably expect the Green Bay Packers to address wide receiver at some point in the draft. That should take some of the heat off Davante Adams, so I expect him to still be efficient. But just the sheer volume and efficiency that they played with him and Aaron Rodgers, I expect to take a step back. People forget that this was still one of the most run-heavy teams in the NFL. It doesn't seem like it, but they were one of the most run-heavy teams in the entire league. They were just super efficient in the passing game. It seemed like they passed the ball a lot. So I think if their volume stays the same, which I don't feel like there's a reason for their passing volume to increase, because they just brought Aaron Jones back and they have a number two in AJ Dillon that's capable. This is a team that wants to run the ball. I think if the volume stays the same, we can't expect the efficiency to match what we saw last year. So I think in order for Davante Adams to put up anything close to what he did last season, we would have to expect an uptick in volume, which I do not project. So that was my regression candidate for your team, Kurt. Let's get into my team, and then we'll close out with Justin's team and get into his year in review.
Hey man, so for your team, I said that CeeDee Lamb would take a leap forward. I know he was more productive when Dak was there. I mean, the offense was just a lot better when Dak was there. So the return of a healthy Dak Prescott should really benefit CeeDee Lamb. And I think he'll probably be a little more comfortable in the offense since it'll be his second year. The regression candidate, it's your man, bro. Freaky deaky Deshaun Watson, man. I mean,
Ah,
and it's
man.
not, and it's not anything, that's gonna be on the field that's gonna make him regress. I'm just predicting he's gonna get suspended, bro. So I mean, that's the only reason why I had to reach for this one, bro, because your team is so loaded, but
Man, it's just, you know, I was hoping his name wouldn't even come up on this podcast. I've been enjoying my peace over the past couple of weeks. There have been no new, you know, cases, you know, at least publicly reported, you know, no additional bad news where it seemed like the first, you know, 10 days of that information dropping every day, it was just something else being piled onto that case. So I don't know what's going on behind the scenes with it. The NFL still hasn't come out and put him on the commissioner's exempt list. So, and we're talking strictly fantasy football. I don't want to get into the personal case, but fingers crossed that this shit doesn't get any worse. And this dude is just going to get his 8-game suspension. He'll settle out whatever he needs to settle out with his civil cases. Hopefully there are, if he's deserving of criminal charges, hopefully they come about and that shit plays out. You know, he should get what he deserves if that shit goes criminal. If it doesn't go criminal, if the DA doesn't pick up the case, I expect him to be back on the field at some point this season. And I'll just leave it at that. But, yeah, I think that's a fine call. I mean, if he's not going to be on the field for half the season, there's no way he can put up the production he did the year before. For my team, I had two bounce-back candidates, two of my wide receivers, Michael Thomas and Terry McLaurin, both for the exact same reasons. They were both playing through ankle injuries. Michael Thomas is a bit more severe. He had a torn deltoid along with his high ankle sprain. And Terry McLaurin is supposed supposedly played through two high ankle sprains last season, and he gets an upgrade at QB. No more Alex Smith dumping the ball off to JD McKissick 150 times. So those were my two bounce back candidates. I didn't have a regression candidate because my team, you know, pretty much from the top down underperformed last year. Let's get into Justin's team. Finally, we should try to wrap this up within the next 5 minutes or so. Justin, I had a leap forward candidate, a bounce back candidate, and a regression candidate. So I'll start with the regression candidate because we just talked about Davante Adams and the level of efficiency that they played with last season. I expect that to come down on all fronts in the passing game. It was just record-setting efficiency. I don't think they're going to replicate that production unless the volume increases, which we talked about, you know, reasons why I don't think that's going to happen. His bounce-back candidate is Julio Jones, and this is funny because Julio is somebody we, you know, shit on for, like, most of the season last year because Justin traded for him, and he wanted to talk shit to everybody about, like, yeah, I got Julio. Hey, remember he said he was going to whoop our ass last year?
I do remember that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he played us back-to-back, and he said, hey, who puts y'all back-to-back on my schedule? No, nigga, this is what you wanted, right? So yeah
Julio but, did.
Yeah. So yeah, I think Julio is a bounce back candidate. Every time he played last year, he was highly productive. I mean, he's still that guy who's going to get you his seemingly, you know, 90 yards receiving minimum. He's still Matt Ryan's number one target on that offense, and he's going to funnel him targets. They have excellent chemistry. And even if Julio loses a step, I mean, what are you losing a step from? 1,800 yards? I think if Julio can play 16, 17 games, he's going to be a 12, 1,300-yard guy. He's going to get his handful of touchdowns like he always does. I think Julio will be fine. I think he's going to be, at worst, a high-end wide receiver, too, in terms of season totals. And then for my leap forward, y'all know who the fuck it is, man. It's Tua, man. It's the Samoan demigod. I mean, Tua got a really bad break. He had a coaching staff that didn't trust him. He had, you know, the worst pass catching core in the fucking NFL to go along with all the injuries that the already shitty pass catchers experienced throughout the season. So already had a shitty group of pass catchers. Then the shitty pass catchers got injured. So he had even shittier pass catchers. And Mike Gesicki was his, you know, default number one wide receiver on that offense for quite some time. So Tua got a really bad break. He's a QB that has shown to be very accurate. I know he wasn't very accurate in the intermediate passing game last year, but we've seen him be highly accurate at the collegiate level. So I will chalk that up to getting acclimated to an NFL offense and a system, but most importantly, coming back off of that gruesome hip injury. So a full season of rehab for Tua, a full season of offensive system integration, even though they have two new offensive coordinators, just having a full, you know, offseason and camp with his new weapons and new regime, I think will help him with his confidence and consistency running the offense. And, you know, just the fact that we expect them to have better weapons. We expect them to address wide receiver as early as pick six and probably going to double down on pass catcher in day two. So this offense should take a huge step forward, whether they address, you know, offensive line, pass catchers, or both. And I expect Tua to take a huge leap forward next year.
Yeah, I'm going to piggyback off of that because that's actually who I had. It's my leap forward for Justin is Tua for some of the same reasons that you already highlighted, man. Like, I don't You know, I think them letting Ryan Fitzpatrick walk, you know, they're not gonna be. I don't foresee them pulling Tua in games like they did last season. I think they're fully committed to Tua. I think they're gonna get some weapons around Tua because, I mean, they desperately need it. I think we should see an improvement there, just based off of that. The regression candidate I have for Justin is Derrick Henry, man. And I'm not saying that Derrick Henry is going to be bad next year, but I mean, he almost got 400 carries last year and he rushed for 2,000 yards and he had 17 touchdowns. It's just no way that he's going to do that again. Like 378 carries, 2,027 yards, and 17 touchdowns. He just can't do that again. So, you know, I think that is the peak that we're going to see from Derrick Henry. I think now we see, you know, him on the other side of the mountain climbing down.
I agree. That's a great one right there. And 2,000 yards and 17 touchdowns, that's not just a Derrick Henry peak, bro. That's like any RB. Like, I mean,
Yeah,
no,
that's
you're not
insane.
even, yeah, you no, you know, it's rare that any RB is ever going to come close. I mean, we may see a couple more, 2,000 yard rushers with the additional game, but I mean, even still, we'll just rarely see stat lines like that, bro. So yeah, I think that's a great call to project Derrick Henry to take a step back and probably be on, the opposite end of the cliff here, of the mountain here, as you said. Let's transition right into Justin's year in review. Justin, aka Heavy Low, aka Heavy Don't Hurt Him, bro. I had no idea how long that bounce back regression and leap forward segment was gonna take, bro. We probably should have done like a consensus and just pick two. Because that shit took forever. And this podcast was only supposed to be like 30 minutes, but we'll still wrap up under an hour, which is great. So back into Justin's year in review. I want to take time to do this. So if we go all the way up to the hour, that's fine. We're already fucking 20 minutes over. But I know Justin listens to every pod and he's been waiting on us to break down his team. Heavy's been a league mate since 2013. One of the OGs of Ace of Spades, the original. A member along with Rio, Chris, myself, BT, Ray, these guys. So he's heavily respected throughout the league, well known throughout the league, infamously known throughout the league for being, Ace of Spades number one finesser for the past 9 years, bro. And we love him here. We give him a lot of shit on this podcast, but he's honestly like one of my favorite league mates, Kurt. So I'm excited to break down his team and give him a little bit of direction from, my humble opinion and talk about his 2020 season and what I think his strategy should be moving forward. So let's start by highlighting Justin's 2020 season. He had a 17-9 overall season, same as Ray. But I didn't realize this until I was looking at his head to head. He actually had a worse season than Ray. Ray went 9-4 last year, and Justin went 8-5 in head to head. He had losses to Ray, had lost to BT, he had a loss to you and myself. We talked about those back to back weeks, and then he lost to Ray again. Kurt, is this like some sort of, Justin won't say it is, but I know Ray would say it is. Is this some type of like brewing rivalry here where Ray is the head honcho now and Justin is the little nigga, bro?
I mean, he was the little nigga last year. I mean, no disrespect, but
I
he put
mean,
them paws on you twice.
he
Like, I don't
smoked
know
him
what else to tell you.
twice. I mean, I know
Yeah.
Justin gonna try to brush it off and be like, man, Ray ain't shit. But I mean, dude, I mean, he on your head. And then Ray was talking shit after those losses too. He was like, he sent the googly eyes to, the big eyes emoji. When he
Yeah.
was smoking them. And when niggas talk shit mid-game while they smoking somebody, bro, that shit be funny as hell to me, bro.
Especially with his Ray, because Ray is like kind of a shit talker, but not really. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. So it was interesting to see Justin's head to head and remember that he actually had a couple losses to Ray and BT from fucking, I think it must have been like a Russell Wilson Tyler Lockett. It must have been one of those Tyler Lockett weeks, bro. But yeah, he had losses to myself, UBT, and twice to Ray, but he had a really good season once again. Justin has had one losing season in Ace of Spades history, and that was the year he got all the way to the grand final at 6-7. So out of nine seasons, he's had a winning season, 8 out of 9. So Justin is one of the highest performing GMs in the league. So this was no surprise that once again he finished with, you know, a positive head-to-head record. But, you know, obviously a disappointing end to the season because he didn't get to where he wanted to get, which is always a grand final. So let's talk about Justin's roster and, you know, where he is in terms of the landscape of the league and, you know, maybe what he can do to get back to the form that he's used to in our Ace of Spades league. So with his roster, talking about his primary starters at the quarterback position, he's pretty good at the QB position. He's got Aaron Rodgers, Tua, and he also has, you know, Drew Lock and Jameis as QB3 streamers. So I think quarterback after the Deshaun Watson trade is probably, you know, his strongest position outside of his RB position. What do you think, Kurt?
Yeah, I would have to agree with you there. Like the quarterback is strong. Yeah, I agree. I think that's a good analysis there.
Yeah, and then his RBs are obviously you know, Derrick Henry, Dalvin Cook. Does he have a RB? Wait, am I missing? I feel like I'm missing one of his RB3. Or am I not?
Yeah, James Conner.
James Robinson is the guy.
James Robinson.
The reason I forgot about James Robinson is because he just acquired him in the offseason. So he's got a really good RB group, Derrick Henry, Dalvin Cook, and James Robinson. We talked about RB volatility on yesterday's pod with Buck, but nonetheless, he has a really good RB core. His tight ends are kind of struggling. He has Ertz and nothing really notable behind Ertz. And then his wide receivers are lacking as well because he's got Keenan Allen and Julio Jones. Both are aging. Keenan Allen is more insulated because he has the young QB and Justin Herbert. But Julio is much older. He's going into his age 32 season now. Even though he has his quarterback, Matt Ryan, they have a ton of chemistry. I mean, the cliff is near for Julio, and we saw it last year with all the injuries that piled up for him. So I think his biggest needs, honestly, is wide receiver depth. After Keenan Allen, his wide receivers are super, super scary for me. He had to sacrifice his youngest receiver to acquire, you know, his QBs because his QB was his biggest need prior to the trade that he made with me. Now he has an issue with wide receiver depth, so he's going to need to address that in the draft. Luckily, he has at least a top 24 pick to be able to take a shot on a wide receiver. His next need for me is tight end. Like I mentioned, Zach Ertz and nothing else, and we don't even know what Zach Ertz's future is going to hold. I imagine he'll be traded or cut, a combination of one of those two things. But wide receiver depth, a true tight end one, and lastly, I think Justin needs some RB youth. We talked about Derrick Henry being on the other end of the mountain, as Max Kellerman would say, you know, not off a cliff, but maybe a ravine. So we could expect, you know, Derrick Henry to slow down a bit. And Dalvin Cook as well. He's going to be 26 this season. And, you know, generally you get into the fifth year of an RB's deal and you can expect a decline in production. So wide receiver depth, a true tight end one, and to get younger at the RB position outside of James Robinson. And I'm going to run with this, Kurt, because we're creeping up on 2 minutes left. So I'll close this out and leave you for a couple final thoughts. If you have any on Justin's roster, the draft capital, this is Justin's biggest fucking issue. He mortgaged literally every single pick he had over the next 3 years for the team he has now. And this was a very risky strategy, and we see how it's playing out because, you know, with Justin's team over the next 3 seasons, what you see is what you get. This is his team, and he doesn't have a way to add to this team over the next 3 drafts. So that's a bit problematic for me because this team finished in fourth place last year, and he doesn't have a way to get better. So it's going to be interesting to see what Justin can do moving these pieces on his roster, whether or not he's going to move, you know, some of these RBs for draft picks or, you know, maybe Keenan Allen, Julio. I mean, I don't know, Kurt. I mean, this is a scary team just because he has to wait until, you know, 2024 to have his full complement of draft picks. And by this time, you know, Julio could be gone. Keenan Allen could be gone. Cook will be gone. Henry will be gone. Aaron Rodgers will be gone. I mean, I don't know what he's going to do. You go ahead, bro, because I'll give you some time to reflect on this.
I agree, man. And I think You know, I think we try to avoid telling people exactly what to do. But if I was in the same situation as Justin and I was looking at this roster, I would be selling everything. I know Buck said like this is the time to try to go in and win. I don't foresee that happening, you know, just looking at this roster. I mean, I guess like if a lot of things broke in his favor, like maybe he could, but if it were me, I would definitely be trying to sell off pretty much everything. Derrick Henry, Dalvin Cook, Keenan Allen, Julio Jones, all of it. Like just sell it.
I think I don't know. Buck said, wait till week five and try this. But this is the issue that I have with that. First of all, I know Buck saw the two fucking teams that were in the grand final last year. No shot he thinks Justin has a chance to compete with us. I don't know where the win now window is for Justin's team. He just doesn't have the talent or the depth. I could lose four starters and I feel comfortable playing against Justin's team. It's just because of the depth and the high-end talent. It in a general dynasty league, a team like this could be competitive, definitely a top three team. But the top two teams in the league are so top heavy, and the top five teams overall are very close to Justin's, and they also have draft picks and the ability to add talent to their teams. And Kurt, we'll run with this for a little bit for a couple more minutes because I just don't want to cut it short. We're already at an hour, and what we'll do is we'll release this podcast like a few days from now. Because I don't want to give him
Okay.
back-to-back hour shows, but I don't want to cut Justin short because he's somebody who invests in the podcast. So we'll give him 5 more minutes here. We'll run with this. That way we don't have to rush. But his draft cap was just scary, bro. And like you said, we discourage, getting on this podcast and telling people like exactly what to do. But I think I'm with you. I think I'd be holding Tua and probably selling everything. I'd be holding Tua and probably selling everything, including J-Rob, bro. I mean, I don't know where this team can go, just based on how current rosters are built in this team. I mean, bro, I have McCaffrey, Saquon, Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, Kelce, Kittle. You have, Josh Allen, Kyler Murray, Justin Herbert, Alvin Kamara, Davante Adams, Calvin Ridley, Darren Waller. Bro, unless we both get decimated, there is no way mathematically Justin can beat either of those teams. There's no way.
It's interesting, man, because I look at players when they get to be about, when they hit a certain age, I start to get a little nervous about them, man. And I think a lot of the players on Justin's teams are for me at the age where I'm like really nervous that like, you're gonna have to ride off into the sunset with some of them. Like, because I would have to really be in a situation where I was trying to win now to buy a 27-year-old running back that's coming off of 400 carries the season before. You know what I'm saying?
And for
So,
sure.
yeah, or like it, it's and I'm not trying to like talk down like the value of his players because Derrick Henry could easily go out there next year and get 1,500 yards rushing
No
again.
doubt.
You know what I mean? But I just, if I had Derrick Henry on my team, bro, like he wouldn't be on my team. He would be on somebody else's,
And you said, I mean, what you said is right. I mean, Derrick Henry could very well go out there and put up 1,500 yards. So could Dalvin Cook. But Curtis, fantasy football is a game of probability. Is it possible? Absolutely. Is it probable? Not really. I mean, at this age, Derrick Henry is already anomalous. He's already an anomaly. He's already produced at a level that players at his age generally don't produce at. So continuously banking on anomalous seasons from players is just not the sandbox that I like to play in. And like you mentioned earlier, players, when they get to this age, you start to really, really worry. And another thing that's working against Justin right now is who is he even going to sell these players to? Because the two teams that are ready to go and going all in on championships, our rosters are already sewn up from top to bottom. Like, I don't need Derrick Henry or Dalvin Cook. I would love to have those players on my team because I think they got a year left in terms of elite production. I would love to have them, but what you have to pay to get them, I'm not paying that. So who is, I mean,
Yeah.
who, so who is he going to sell these players to? Like, I'm not giving him Antonio Gibson plus for Dalvin Cook because even if Antonio Gibson never performs at the levels that we've seen Dalvin Cook perform, I'll take a slight decrease in production for 4 years. I'm just taking the years at this point. Like, there's just no, there's no fit for Derrick Henry or Dalvin Cook on my roster. I think I'm fine at every position, and I'm one of the few teams in the league that has the capital to go get him. Now, maybe he can broker a deal with Ray or Danny. You know, maybe they decide they're in the market for Derrick Henry or Dalvin Cook and they want to bolster their roster, or somebody like Elmo, whose team is going to look a lot different after this draft. But the acquisition cost to get one of these RBs, I'm not sure that any of those teams are going to be willing to pay that. I'm not saying they should or shouldn't. I just don't know. We just rarely see blockbuster deals happen in a league like that that don't involve me, to be perfectly honest. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Justin's just, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, if I had like a team like that I thought, you know, I could get Cam or Kurt this year, then yeah, like you get Derrick Henry, you know what I mean? He might get it done. Like,
for sure.
But I, you know, or Dalvin Cook, but I just don't know like long-term, bro, like what you're going to be able to do with I just don't think as his roster is constructed right now that he can win. And I think that the players that he has, their years of being valuable it's short term. You know what I mean? Because even if Derrick Henry goes out next year and produces, like, okay, then he'll be 28 years old coming off 1,500 yards. Like, I'm not buying a 28-year-old running back. You know what I'm saying?
And you heard what Buck said yesterday on the pod when he briefly touched on Justin's team. He said this is pretty much their last run. He's like Cook, Henry, AR. He's like this is the last go for these guys. So you kind of gotta go all in. And like I said, the thing that's working against Justin is there just aren't a lot of buyers, because even teams like Danny and Ray more so, because he's a bit more delusional than Danny. Danny understands he's not a piece away. Maybe right. Ray would think, like, well, if I get Dalvin Cook, I could beat Kurt, like, ha, ha, ha. But, you know, I don't think that's the case. But maybe, you know, somebody with that type of mentality trying to go all in can do it. But, yeah, Justin's team's real scary. It's real scary to me. And I didn't realize how scary it was until I was doing the podcast yesterday with Buck, and we started breaking it down right here on this show. But it's just real scary, bro. Like, outside of Tua, that's probably the only long-term asset I really feel comfortable with. And even with AR, like, I think AR's got a few years of, you know, QB1 play left in him. But, you know, how valuable is that for what Justin is trying to accomplish, seeing as his win now window is kind of fool's gold right now? So anyway, we could wrap up here. We're already 6 minutes and 50 seconds over time. Heavy, my advice to you, bro, is, you know, just continue to do what you've been doing, bro. And what I mean by that is continue to be aggressive and continuously changing your team and your outlook and strategy. I think you're still learning how to be dominant in the dynasty space, but you've been really successful overall in fantasy. So I know you'll figure it out on your own. I think me and Kurt share the same, you know, outlook on the team, in the sense that you have some volatile assets on your team. Kurt, one other thing that I didn't mention, you know, what I didn't agree with Buck on, you know, waiting till week 5 and seeing if you win. If Derrick Henry gets hurt in week 2, if Dalvin Cook gets hurt in week 2, they're Leonard Fournette now.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
They're Leonard Fournette now. A 27-year-old back with an injury, you run the risk of that happening with RBs. And at this age, if either of these guys get hurt, that's it for their market. That's it. So just be careful, bro. Just be cautious and be strategic and be thoughtful in your approach, and just try to figure out what you can do to, you know, flip some of these assets around into younger players. Or hopefully you don't have to get into this scenario, but, you know, Kurt, you know, maybe somebody wants to send 2 future firsts for Dalvin Cook, and that's not an offer that you want to take for a player like Dalvin Cook. But, you know, if you end up moving towards a full rebuild, those are maybe some offers that you got to look into. So we'll see, bro. That's the show. That's the show, man. This is one of the longer ones. That was supposed to be one of the shorter ones, but I think it was a strong podcast. We talked about a lot, but we can wrap up here. As always, y'all, please tune into our next episode. The NFL draft is 12 days away while we're recording this. By the time we release it, the NFL draft will probably be like 10 days, 9 days away. I'm not really sure, but we'll release this in a few days. The Ace of Spades draft is 29 days away from the date. We'll continue our year-end episode. Our year in review episodes next week. We just finished Justin's team. Next week we'll do Danny's team, and we'll also continue to build the episodes around your feedback and questions. I'm rambling, man. Drop the outro. Holler at you boys later. And remember, it's up there and it's still stuck there.